Hello, this is Brian Wampler with another episode of the Chasing Tone Podcast, a podcast about guitars and amps and effects, as well as a healthy dose of interesting off-topic discussions, mostly off-topic, sometimes, but not always. Joining me today is Blake Weiland again from the Tone Mob and the YouTube channel that he's doing a video per day this month.
Why do I do these things to myself? I've actually been wanting to do this for a long time, and there was always a reason not to. I was going to do it last month, and then I was like, but you're going to Nashville for about a week, so that's not going to work. And so I'm just like, all right, this is the month. We're going to do it. September, it's 30 days, 30 videos, 30 days. And I literally don't know what these videos are going to be. The first one was a pedal demo. There'll probably be more pedal demos, but I might explore the world of vlogging, because that seems to be a thing that people like.
Casey Neistat style, huh? I gotcha.
I was thinking Brian Wampler style,
you know. the thing about a couple things here. A vlog is, I know people like to call the JHS videos a vlog, but it's really not a typical vlog, because a vlog is kind of like, here's what I'm drinking coffee today and I'm playing through these pedals. It's kind of like a reality show, but on YouTube, right? Sort of, in a way. Whereas like what I call what Josh does or what I do, not really vlogging, but just video content. It's kind of what I refer to it as, because it's got a topic around it. And it's just like a little, kind of like a little movie, just a little tiny movie. But I do love, with that said, I do love vlogs. And those who know me well know that I am a gigantic Casey Neistat fanboy, like ridiculously big. If I was going to have another kid, I might consider calling them Casey.
Your favorite thing to do. You wouldn't. I thought you were going to name them Blake. Okay. Never mind.
No, I changed my mind on that one just about 30 seconds ago. You know?
Wow. I see how I rate. That's wonderful.
No, but really with doing a video every day, there's several components here. One is you got to think of content every day, which if you're vlogging, that makes it a little easier in some ways, because you're not trying to think of what's a trending topic I should talk about today. But there's also the editing, which takes usually way longer than the filming does. The filming's actually a really short part. In fact, I recorded three videos this week because I have been doing a piss poor job of my video content. So I cranked out three this week, and now I'm in the middle of editing them. And the videos, I mean, once everything was set up and once I had kind of had my notes done, the videos took 10, 15 minutes to actually film. It didn't take that long, but it was getting my notes set up and figuring out, okay, so what are the keywords that I should include in my title? And you know, SEO businessy type stuff. That's not the fun part. You know, the fun part's now I finally get to play through this Reeves Electro Fuzz for 10 minutes. It's going to be awesome. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That, you know, it's a weird thing. Cause like, I know that I've needed to get on the YouTube train for years. I've known that, and I've just found reasons not to do it. You know, made up reasons. They're not real reasons. Not to do it for so long. And I finally just decided to punish myself. Like, you know that you've needed to do this for a very long time, and it will help your business, and it will, you know, create more content for everybody to hopefully enjoy and all that jazz. And now you're going to do it. Now you're really going to do it. And so hopefully, like, after this 30 days is over, like, a video, I'll probably take like a week off or so, like, and do no videos. And then I'm going to try to be as consistent as possible with one a week. So
I predict after you go through this exercise, I think that you're going to be so much better at doing the videos just in general, but also at editing the videos, and you'll probably be able to crank them out way quicker.
That is my hope. I'm actually in the process. Part of the thing that takes me so long, and you and I both struggle with this, is, I'm not very organized. And so
I thought you were going to say handsome.
Well, there's that. We also struggle Brian, with you, that.
Brian, you know what I'm talking about here, because you were ugly.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're both ugly, so we struggle with that. Nothing we can do there, you know. But, well, I guess the Kardashians have proved otherwise. You can do something about it. You just have to have lots of money.
With enough money, many problems are solved, apparently.
But it's more that like my spot, I have to set it up every time, you know, for pedal demos specifically. I got to set up everything, set up the mic, set up the blah, 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 blah. And I think what this will help me gain the discipline to do is just like leave it there, leave it set up so that it's just ready to go. Cause there's no way I'm going to have the time to do it if I have to set things up every single time and every single video. It needs to just kind of be that way. And I can make minor tweaks here and there, but we'll see. I'm going to experiment with a lot of different videos. It's not going to be just pedal demos. There will be lots of pedal demos, but it's not going to be just that because I think there are other things that people like to hear about too. So I'm not sure what the next video is going to be. I considered doing a little bit of a, at some point, I considered doing like one about me. I get messages and emails and stuff that, because I kind of, to a lot of people's perception, I kind of just came out of nowhere. I'm like, here, I'm a guy on the internet, which I get is because that's kind of what I did. So which, I might tell my story a little more, you know.
You are a guy that is on the internet, so there's some truth to that, but there is more behind that, right?
Yeah, you know, there was some thought behind it, and not exactly. There's definitely some stumbling into certain things, but there was some effort put into trying to get into this industry. And so I might do like a story time with Blake, because I do get a lot of those questions in message and email form. And, you know, a lot of times people are like shocked when I'm like, well, I used to be a mechanic. And they're like, what? You did what? Like, you know, so I might do like a story time, like here's Blake's story if anybody cares type of thing. So we'll see. That's my idea for my next one. We'll see if I get anything better before I actually start filming later today.
Yeah, I mean, I was at the Andy Wood Woodshed Experience this week in Tennessee. I think I talked about it last week, maybe, or the last time we did a podcast, which is like 10 days ago or whenever it was. And, you know, there was Joe Bonamassa was there, Brent Mason was there, Mark Letary, Andy Timmons, Greg Koch, of course, Andy Wood. And it was a really cool setting because, like, there was maybe 100 people there total, but they kind of did these little clinics, these very intimate clinics where they'll talk about anything. You ask them whatever, they'll show you whatever. Like, it's basically just getting to hang out with all these people, which, you know, if it's cool for me for one, but especially for those who don't really get the chance to, you know, call up these guys on the phone and say, hey, I got a quick question for you. You know what I mean? Like, it's a little different whenever they buy your gear because you kind of have a relationship with them versus, you know, it's just someone that loves their music or whatever. But it was still an incredibly insightful in multiple different ways. And I look forward to that video coming out as well. But, you know, one of the things that fascinated me, and we can get at this a little bit more in a minute, was just the questions that people ask. It's not that they're bad questions, but it seems like maybe we aren't, as content producers, giving good enough answers, or maybe getting the answers out to enough people. Because there are still a lot of questions like, how do I get my tone similar to Joe Bonamassa? How do I set this pedal to get this tone? You know, and that's something that we've talked about a lot, that you set pedals to get less treble and more treble, or more bass, less bass, more gain, less gain, et cetera. Not necessarily to sound like Joe Bonamassa. Now, that might be what you want to do, but there's a lot of factors in there outside of where you set knobs. So there were still a lot of questions like that as well that I love talking about that stuff. But in my head, I'm thinking, maybe I need to do another video on some of these topics, because obviously, there's still a large group of people that still kind of struggle with this.
Yeah, it's a. I wonder how much of that is somebody who listens to this podcast on a regular basis, for instance, or how much of that is somebody who's maybe not new to gear, but new to thinking about it in those terms. Because I do get some questions from people who I would not expect to get questions from sometimes, where it's like, how do I get XYZ tone? I'm like, well, I mean, that information's out there, like as far as what that person uses, and you can get all that same stuff. But at the same time, your room impacts it, your playing style impacts it, like all these things. Like, one of the things that was, I heard somebody say recently was, you know, Stevie Ray Vaughan was clearly a big fan of Hendrix, right? But he still sounds like Stevie Ray Vaughan, and he doesn't quite sound like Hendrix. You know, there's some similarities, obviously, but at the end of the day, you're still going to sound like you, which is good or bad. It's bad if you're me, but it's good if you're somebody else.
Well, it was fascinating. On one of the Brent Mason talks, Andy Wood was there. And, you know, Brent was playing his stuff. He handed the guitar to Andy, didn't change anything. No settings changed. And they sounded completely different, even though they're playing the same style. And that's what Andy was saying. He's like, oh, my gosh, like this is a good lesson in how much your hands and your note choice and how you're picking, like everything, all these other factors really go into making a guitar sound. Outside of gear in general, just literally how you're holding the guitar and how you're picking the strings on this guitar make an incredible difference. And it was really cool for the folks there that were watching it, see that difference from Brent handing a guitar to another guitarist and them sounding completely different.
That's really cool. I mean, so how did that event exactly go? I'm still kind of mad that we didn't like see each other.
I know.
But you know, whatever. Yeah, I flew out Friday at noon, which was probably about the time you got there.
Yes, I left home about noon, actually. So we literally just missed each other.
Of course we did.
But it was cool. It was at a campground in Crossville. I think it was Crossville, Tennessee. And normally this campground, from what I can gather, it's owned by an ex, he was a gold medalist, John McCready is his name. And he made a camp kind of, it looks like it's around gymnast or gymnastic stuff.
Okay.
And a beautiful camp, nice log cabins on a lake. And it was a gorgeous setting. But they, you know, kind of moved all that stuff out of the way. They had a big warehouse that they put on a show for everyone there. All the guitar players, which you might have seen pictures here recently on Instagram. If not, they're getting ready to come soon. But it was just an event that you pay, you know, some money to go to. This 3-day event includes food and housing and basically everything that you would need. And you get a chance to sit down with your guitar heroes and even play with them. You know, you can sit down and jam with them if you want. So it was a cool experience. It was a really cool experience. I think Andy and John did a really great job putting that together. But I had never met Joe. So that was fascinating. He's a fascinating guy. He had his Dumble there.
Ooh.
And a $250,000 Les Paul.
Did you play it?
I didn't actually play it, but this is how cool he is. He was letting everybody I'm calling them little clinics. It's kind of, that sounds very sterile. So it's more like a hang, you know, and there was three going on at one time. So there's 30 people in the room or so. It was pretty intimate. And he was letting everybody here, come up here and play this guitar. And the thing that he showed the most was, here, I'm going to play this stuff. I'm going to hand you my $250,000 guitar. You're playing through my $75,000 Dumble. Now, sound like Joe Bonamassa.
Right.
And his whole point was basically everything I just said. It's so much more involved than the exact gear. And that's what he was really trying to get across to people, is you're playing my exact gear and you're not able to sound like me because you're not me. You need to, and what you need to do is find what you sound like. And then if you need gear to support that, then buy the gear for that reason. So it was very interesting. A lot of great stuff. And even as much as I hang around Brent Mason, there are still some things he talked about. I'm like, I had no idea. Like, for example, the song Chattahoochee.
Mm-hmm.
I hope I can tell this story. I think I can. It's not bad. I found out after all these years of knowing Brent, which has almost been 15, 16 years now. Chattahoochee was originally written in A. And the lick in A sounded too much like, what is that song called?
I don't know.
That was How do you, I cannot sing that, obviously. Let's see. I got it. Let's see. Okay.
I can think of the Chattahoochee riff.
That's it. It sounded like the song from Footloose too much.
Oh.
When it was an A. So that lick in the song Footloose, run a room. Mm-hmm. It sounded too much like that. So they moved it to C. Maybe that's a really not funny at all to anyone else, but to me that was fascinating because I had no idea that song was an A. And two, they changed it because it sounded too much like Footloose, like the opening to Footloose.
I think that kind of stuff is fun. That little trivia bits that you would never know. You would never ever know that unless he told you. That's the only way you would ever know. That's so cool.
It's awesome.
So were there any other big takeaways from the event?
For me personally?
Yeah.
I don't really... See, I actually had a couple talks there. That's why I was there, is because we were talking about tone-related stuff, and so they invited me to basically kind of do a couple talks on it. So I'm kind of approaching it different rather than going to learn something. I think one of the things that struck me the most is how great a dumble sounds when you're next to it, but how I would never pay $75,000 for a dumble. Or $250,000 for a Les Paul. But I get how some would like to. I understand. I'm thinking, if I have $250,000, do I spend it on a guitar? Nope. I sure don't. No. I really don't. Mm-mm.
So this is kind of an interesting topic that I've explored with other people, and it's the epitome of Western entitled, I don't know what you would call it. This is not a first world problem, but it's a total first world question. But I think the nerds that listen to this podcast will probably understand. But what is the most that you think you personally would spend on a guitar? Because I certainly wouldn't spend $250,000 on anything that wasn't a house, pretty much.
A couple grand and I'm good. I think you can get a pretty damn good guitar for a couple grand.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, even though my hero Brent Mason's, he's got the custom model that's all relic and everything just like his. As a collector, I get it. How, what's it like, $10,000 or $11,000 or $12,000, something like that. I get how that has its audience. I'm just not one of them. I want a guitar that sounds great, feels great, and if it gets dinged up a little bit, I'm not, completely bummed out.
Yeah, that's pretty much where I sit. So I think I would spend up to $4,000 for something that was a dream. But my problem is one of my dreams I have, and it only costs $2,000. So I'm right there with you. $4,000 is the tippy top, and it would have to be some sort of next level thing for me, because I think you get past $2,000-$2,500 and you start getting, I appreciate those that sell expensive, really nice high-end guitars, and I understand why they're expensive and what kind of work goes into them. But I personally just don't see myself spending more than $4,000 ever, and I'm going to mostly huddle sub $2,000. That's me.
Right. My Whitfields are my most expensive guitar, and they're a couple $1,000, I think, a piece. And for me, they're worth it. I play them all the time. They feel like an extension of my body. They're just, I just love them. I can't say enough about them. If I didn't love them, I wouldn't play them on nearly 95% of the videos I put out, but... that's why I play them, because I love them so much.
Mm-hmm.
But even $10,000 on a guitar, I respect its its art, I guess, and the work that goes into making that art. It's just not worth it to me. I'm not going to spend $10,000 on a guitar.
No, I don't think I can either. I feel like I would feel. And I'm not judging anybody. This is just me personally. I think I would feel kind of weird. I'd be like, was that the best use of my capital? I don't know that it necessarily was the best use of my capital there. But I mean, at the same time, I get it. I understand why these things exist. I understand why the market is the way it is. And I'm not hating on anybody for doing that. I certainly would love to play Joe Bonamassa's $250,000 Les Paul, and I would be stoked to do so. But it's just not the market that I play in, I guess.
Yeah, it's not my thing either. I mean, this is heard through the grapevine, not direct from Joe, but as I understand, Joe's reason for buying a lot of those old vintage guitars and amps and such is not that he's hoarding them. It's that he doesn't want it to be in like a museum and not be played somewhere. So he's buying them to really kind of preserve the history of it. And so it gets to, you know, it gets hands on it. All his stuff gets hands on it. So at least that's how the story was relayed to me by someone who knows him really well. So
that certainly seems to be the case. If he's letting, you know, random guitar players play his stuff, he's obviously interested in it being played, which, you know, mad respect for that.
You know, we're talking, there was a, you know, a couple kids that were 10, 12 years old or so, and he'd stuck it out. He said, you ever played a $250,000 guitar? No. And he's like, all right, don't let this be the first time you dropped a $250,000 guitar.
That's funny.
So cool, dude. Fantastic player. I have to say, walking away from this, that's a good takeaway. Walking away from this, I am a bigger fan. Not that I wasn't a fan, but I'm a much bigger fan of Joe now than I was before I went there. And it mostly just has to do with his personality. I honestly, because, you know, you read stuff on the internet and media is biased. We both know this, right? And so it's some stuff.
What?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. But from reading past articles and stuff, I wondered, like, is he going to be a nice guy or like not so nice of a guy? And he's actually a super nice guy. Now, he's intense. And when he, you know, when he says something, he means it. And he's, you know, he's not shy at all. And maybe that comes across in a weird way to people. Like, if, you know, if you're writing an article and you want to portray that in a little different light, I suppose you could, but I didn't take it negative in any way.
We'll be right back.
Is real music dying? What even is real music, and who are we to judge that? Well, my father is a lifelong musician, and together we've been making music for over a decade. In our new podcast, we dare to ask the urgent, the weird, and the deep questions, and we have a lot of wild stories to tell. No matter what genres you enjoy, whether you're a musician, a producer, or a listener, we invite you to discover unconventional perspectives on music. So tune in and go follow Mad Makings of Music wherever you listen to podcasts.
Well, that's a good sign of a good time. Basically, that's what I'm going to call that. Sounds like you had a great trip.
Yeah. And there is something else that I realized as well. Cause like I said, at the end of this on Saturday night, they all put on a concert, and I say a concert, there's 50 people, you know, 50. Yeah. There's probably 50 people in this room. So it was a big stage, but we were all standing next to the stage, right? Like we're all right there. They're sweating on us. It's so intimate. The thing I noticed that I'd seen before, but I guess it struck me different this time. And that's that I am not a performer. In fact, I mean, I play guitar, but those guys are on a whole nother level. I mean, just like I was watching whenever they were playing, the amount of emotion that literally, it's not a fake thing because they do it when they're practicing, when no one's around too. The amount of emotion that comes through them, through this instrument it's hard to explain, but when you're right, you know, when you're 2 feet away from them, it's a really cool eye-opening experience. And I was watching it thinking, that's just not me. I mean, I think that's fantastic. But maybe this is one reason why I'm not that good, because this instrument isn't a part of my soul as much as it is, you know, the Greg Cox or the Mark Letaris or whatever. It's just, they're just on a different level. Their talent level is on a whole different level for me.
There's something about performing versus playing too. This is a really strange thing that I didn't think we would get to be discussing, but I was actually listening to a podcast while I was in Nashville, driving around and whatnot. And it was an interview with a guy named Lil Lotus. I know this is completely shifting gears, but it was he's quote unquote one of the emo rappers that is around. And I'm just like, I don't really follow that music that much, but I'm kind of interested in it as a culture, and watching how it was similar to the stuff that I was experiencing when I grew up. But I was listening to this guy talk, and he was talking about how he had played in bands. He had played in like hardcore bands and other things before he started doing the rap thing. And he was getting back to playing in a band. But what he was explaining was that a lot of mainstream, at least like, I think this is a little more true a few years ago than it is right now, but a lot of like mainstream rappers didn't really know how to perform like a guy in a band does, or a guy in a heavy band does. And so what he was explaining, he was like, I wanted to bring like the performance of a heavy metal show to rap into this scene because of how he came up. And I was thinking about it. I was like, yeah, that's just a different thing. Like you watch a guy in a very heavy band as a front man perform, and it's not the same thing as like a mainstream hip hop artist. It's completely different. And yeah. He wanted to like kind of bring that performance. He was like, bands know how to perform, or good bands like know how to perform. And they know they're not just up there playing. They're up there putting on a show. That's the whole point. And I think the same thing could be said for great guitar players. Like Jimi Hendrix wasn't playing guitar behind his head because it helped him play better. It was part of the show.
There absolutely is truth in that. Yeah. So, and I'm separating those two. I guess maybe the performance aspect. I've always realized that's just part of the persona, right? Like you got to love to perform. If you don't love to perform, then you might be better off in more of a studio type environment where, you know, precision is what's most important, and play, you know, a different type of artistry goes on with that, you know, rather than performing. But the thing that I notice is even without people watching them, when they're just working on a song with the band, and it's just those guys, there's still this amount of emotion that just bleeds from their fingers through this piece of wood and strings and with strings on it. And it's, I mean, maybe I'm doing a bad job of explaining it, but it was one of those things that just struck me in a very unique way that like I've never experienced before. And it's hard to explain, but I can just see it in my mind. It's just a part of their body. And it's like they can't breathe without it. Now they can, obviously, but that's the best way I can explain it.
No, I get it. I know what you're saying. I've seen performances and seen people enough times. You know it when you see it. You know, there's some people that just have it. And all those gentlemen that were there have it. So, yeah, good stuff, man.
So, and then lastly, before we go, my new gear day, picked up a Reeves Electro 2-in-2 fuzz. I don't know if we talked about this on a few episodes ago, whenever I was, my mind was blown because the inside of these things are a work of art in themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so I picked one up. It arrived today. I'm editing a video on it as we speak. And it is, the pictures do it justice, but it's even cooler when it's in your hands. It's freaking phenomenal, the work that goes into it. And, you know, it's a great sounding fuzz face. It really is. Super great.
So I love it when you got a functional work of art on your hands. That's the best. That's so cool.
Right? The problem is, I mean, I kind of want to put it on my shelf with the bottom of it off just to admire the insides of it. but generally those don't mount on a pedal board very well without the bottoms.
You know, what you got to do is you got to get little links of bike chain, and you screw it into the holes, and then you just unscrew it from your pedal board once in a while. That way you can leave the back off. That seems to
That's
be a
true.
Very, very, dumb way to do it, actually. But sure.
It's not very quick to switch pedals out in that scenario.
No. I mean, I shouldn't say it's dumb. I've seen it done by somebody who's not going to switch their board off very often. But if you're trying to look at the guts on a regular basis, that doesn't really help you. So,
never mind. Right. You're mounted to the pedal board. That's a terrible idea, Blake.
Sorry. I'm loaded with them. Don't worry.
All right. Well, that's a good place to stop for this week. Thank you for listening to the Chasing Tone podcast. As always, if you have any comments, questions, or concerns, even those pesky concerns, you can email podcast@wamperpedals.com. That goes straight to me. You can email Blake at info@tonemob.com. If you like this podcast and you want to show support for the show, the easiest and most free, not least free, most free way to share is to simply share this with your friends, bandmates, and others into guitar podcasts. That's the best way. So thank you for listening. Oh, wait a minute. Let me back up. I forgot a key part of it. Make sure you check out Blake's YouTube channel. Is it Tone Mob?
It's The Tone Mob. Yep.
It's The Tone Mob. So look for The Tone Mob on YouTube. Make sure you watch every one of his daily videos, comment and like and subscribe. I know I hate that terminology, but literally does help people. That helps grow the channel. And check out his podcast as well. And then, of course, if you're feeling like you need some guitar pedals in your life, hit up WamplerPedals.com. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next week.
Bye.